it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
What's going on, Bulls Nation? Welcome into the CHGO Bulls Podcast. Coming to you live from our CHGO headquarters here in West Loop, downtown Chicago. I'm Peck, Bulls underscore Peck, joined by my guys, Big Dave, Bow, B-A-W-L Sports, Will the Goat Gottlieb, Will underscore Gottlieb, our pal and producer, Sarah on the controls. What's up, Sarah? You don't have a mic? Well, she doesn't have a mic because we are very pleased to welcome in as our guest today, one of Will's colleagues on that Bulls beat, doing great work covering the Chicago Bulls for the Chicago Tribune. Follow her on Twitter for all of her Bulls reporting, at By Julia Poe. Read her stuff in the Trib. Ladies and gentlemen of Bulls Nation, give it up for Julia Poe! What's going on, Julia?
Thank you guys for having me. This is great.
Welcome. Congratulations on another season down.
Thank you.
You made it.
Yes.
Thank you.
How did it feel to cross the finish line?
Listen, I did not think at the start of the season that we would be ending it with trying to scramble booking flights back from Miami again, but you know, here we are, just kind of some deja vu to
yeah.
Get things out.
Maybe something comfortably familiar about, you know, Bulls heat, do or die, second play-in game.
It really did feel like kismet when we ended up kind of lining up in that for the end of the play-in tournament. Like, it was a strange feeling. I'm sure
if you're
going
to go with continuity. You have to follow through with continuity.
They told us what they were going to do, and God, did they follow through on it.
Now, Julia, we like when our guests come here, we like to make it a safe space for them to, you know, talk about their experiences working with Will Gottlieb, because we know how much of a tyrant, loud mouth that this guy can be.
So abrasive.
Just ridiculous.
You guys know me so well.
Turning over tables. Like, he's just wild like that. But what is it like, you know, getting to work with Will?
Well, you know, it's true that they have to, at the United Center, they have to, like, screw down the tables to keep him from flipping them up in media row. I don't know how you guys know about that.
So familiar, yeah. Man. Like, we can talk. Like, it is ridiculous.
I get so many dirty looks from Bulls PR because of his behavior. I mean, I swear.
No, it's been great. It's been great having Will on the beat. And it's been a, I feel like we were able to kind of provide some emotional support throughout this, the
it was a long
ups
season.
And downs
it was
of the
a long
season,
season.
Definitely.
That's awesome.
Julia, whenever we have people who cover the team on our show, we always like to give our fellow Bulls fans a chance to get to know them a little bit better and how they found their way in to this crazy, fun, chaotic business that is the world of sports media. So please, if you would, just tell us a little bit about your background, your interest in sports, your interest in journalism, and if one of the two kind of superseded the other before they found their way to the gig you're doing now.
Definitely. So the sports definitely came first. I am a born and raised Kansas City sports fan. Mm. So my
big Jayhawk over here.
Oh, let's go. Mm-hmm. Rock chalk, baby. Mm-hmm. My parents met because of the Chiefs. I exist because
at
of the Chiefs.
At a Chiefs bar, right?
Yeah. They met at Lynn Dickey's bar in Kansas City.
Wow.
My dad popped the question at a Chiefs game at Arrowhead. Like,
wow.
Yeah, I came into the world and straight into a Chiefs onesie. So, so that definitely came first. Love of basketball came because of Kansas basketball. Mm-hmm. 2008 kind of really set that sailing. Mm-hmm. And then I became a journalism nerd in high school and just kind of latched on and did not let go of that. So first job out of college, I went to USC, and then first job out of college was covering soccer down in Orlando. Mm-hmm. And then I got the dream job here, and now we're just trying to hold on to it as long as possible.
Oh, man. Is it a ranking? Like you just said, it basically was football, basketball.
Yeah.
You know, is that the same ranking it is for you now?
I would say basketball is definitely number one now. Football is like special in that it's probably the only truly social sport that I have left. Mm. Like the Chiefs, like that's like family. You know what I mean? Like that's like a special social and family thing that I can do. But in terms of like watching a game, basketball, that was what I played growing up as well. So that definitely took over for me probably once I hit like middle school. And mm-hmm. now, I mean, now that we cover it, we just live and breathe it 24/7 because, I mean, NBA season's over, but the Dub's here. Yeah, so we're kind of just locked in on that year round now.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So with football being something that you still get to experience more so from a fan perspective as opposed mm-hmm. to a journalist professional perspective, as someone who's also sort of a transplant here for being a Chiefs fan, like, I know the Chiefs and their fans have taken, residence in a couple different bars around the Chicago area. Like, do you have like spots that make you feel at home here in Chicago when you're rooting on your Chiefs?
You know what's crazy is that Chiefs season is tough for it because I travel for the beat, so I'm on the road for the majority. Like, I've watched way too many Chiefs games in hotels this year. Like, just way too many. That's the only thing I'm a little sick of. But I have gone to some Kansas games, including the national championship game that we won at Lottie's, which is a great spot. Check out for those games. So that definitely has been kind of the hideout for that. But I do know that there is a good Chiefs bar that has like real good Kansas City barbecue in town. I just have not gotten there yet because the Bulls run my life for that time.
Those damn Bulls getting in the way of you enjoying your life.
And sanity. Bulls do it 2-for-1.
What are you going to get up to during the off season? How do you spend your off season typically?
Well, right now I'm hoping to just like sleep a lot because the Bulls have gifted us with time. Watch a lot of good basketball. But yeah, I think big off season plans this year are definitely going to be locking in with the Sky. I said I was maybe going to take like a little bit more of a breather, and then they drafted two of like the most interesting picks that they could have done. Camila Cardoso had her introductory press conference today, so kind of hard not to want to kind of keep up with them. But a lot of Sky, a lot of women's sports, and then hopefully just like I said, like read, sleep, maybe like
recover.
Just recover. You get
that's
it.
The one thing about the team not making the postseason is you just have a long summer to recover.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Would love a postseason, though.
One day.
Not opposed to it at all. Absolutely. How was the press conference?
Oh, it was great. Yeah. It was great. I think it is kind of funny with this new wave of, like, young Dub athletes coming in. They're all getting these questions about, like, what do you want your legacy to be like? Mm. Like, Candace Parker's played here. Sylvia Fowles. What do you want your legacy to be? And all of them are kind of like, I'm 22.
Not the shoulders.
I am thinking about Diana Taurasi and what she's going to do to me in 4 to 5 business weeks. Facts. Let's get through that first. Facts. And then maybe we'll like think about legacy. So that is just kind of like a funny moment of, it feels like this big watershed moment for all of these young athletes, but at the same time they're like 21, 22, and they're just trying to figure, you know, like they have to pay rent for the first time. It's such a funny transition.
Come up with new nicknames for themselves.
Angel Reese has got to figure out what kind of Barbie she's going to be now, you know?
I don't think Bayou Barbie really fits with Chicago. Not a lot of bayous here.
We'll
figure it out.
Not a lot of gator hunting.
We can build one for her. Get to the shovel and get some marshes going.
Well, so you said that, you know, it was a big step that you were excited about getting to Chicago and getting assigned to a beat like the Bulls for a paper like the Trib. So much history between that media outlet and that team in this city. Is there maybe something that's still on your bucket list as a sports journalist as far as teams and markets that you would love to cover someday?
Maybe not teams and markets, just because, like I said, Kansas City stuff is so like protected for myself that I don't think I'd necessarily I'm not like dying to cover the Chiefs because I don't want to know.
Right.
I don't want to know.
Like, Will's a Bulls fan. Ask him about his mental health. Or at least he used to be.
But, you know, I definitely do think that there are milestones within the NBA that I'd love to cover. Like, would love to experience a finals. Would love to be able to kind of have, you know, I mean, there's some things that we can't control. Like, you can cover a team for so long and never get a number one overall pick or something like
that. Right, yeah.
But I definitely think, like, a finals experience, I haven't really gotten a lot of any NBA playoffs experience yet outside of that first round against Milwaukee. And that was incredible. I mean, even though it was, you know, Zach got sick and people were hurt and everything, it still was, like, an amazing experience. Yeah. So I think just kind of having, maybe just feeling like a team, being able to cover a team, having a little bit more momentum going into a postseason would be really fun. And then a finals would love to cover that. And everyone's got like the bucket list. Like, I'd love to see a Super Bowl someday or something like that. But I don't know if I need to have a little credential on for that.
I mean, you're a Chiefs fan. Just, you know, get yourself a ticket and go enjoy it.
Can you Venmo me like $500? And I'll be there right next year.
Check with me next January. We'll see how it goes. I wanted to know how it went from Kansas for you to USC.
Yeah.
Like, how did you make that transition? I mean, just because that's pretty far away.
Yeah. No, it was funny. I'm an only child and I'm like incredibly close to my parents. Mm-hmm. And when we hit senior year of college, all of us in the best possible way were like, you need to go far away for college. Like, just need the space, need to push myself. And USC was, I mean, I can talk for so long about how great USC was as like an undergrad experience for me. But it was great. It was so different from anywhere I'd lived before. I cannot overemphasize how nice it is to go to college somewhere that's that warm, beautiful, just lovely every day. But I think the best part of it was that sports environment, because it's not just the quality of like the football team. Mm-hmm. Every team is competitive at one point or another. And they also marry that with having the LA sports market, like the media market. Sure. So their SIDs, their athletic department, just know what to do, and they really prioritize student journalists getting, like, they see that as part of the education, is helping these kids learn how to be good journalists. So they would help us and give us, like, one-on-ones. We were getting, like, one-on-ones with Sam Darnold when I was a sophomore in college, you know, just stuff like
that's
that.
That's really
cool. And that was, a lot of places don't do that, and so I think that was really special and prepped me, and now I'm a really annoying USC alum and talk like this.
I was going to say, well, so as a USC alum, are you sick of the Caleb Williams fever and discourse going on in the city right now?
I saw some man compare him to Prince today. That was a bad thing.
Like, it was a bad thing, right?
And exactly. I was like, my man, that is the best.
What?
Yes. Yeah. Look this up, Will. I was irate.
Yeah, it was some random like NFL writer who was on Pablo Torre's show today.
Yeah,
and he said some anonymous NFL GM said that he was like Prince, but in a bad way.
Yeah.
Like, when is this bad?
I'm like, this is the best possible thing. If someone looked at me and was like, man, you're giving Prince today, I would cry and I would make like my girlfriend take a million fit pics of me and post it on every, because that'll never be a thing someone will say
to
me.
You don't want an absolute superstar to be your franchise quarterback?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think the stuff that I'm tired of, like, I don't know if Caleb's going to be a make or break quarterback for the Chicago Bears for a litany of reasons. The main thing I'm tired of is just like the light veil of homophobia that has been over a lot of things that people have been
God
saying.
God forbid
about
he paints
him.
His fingernails.
Yeah, and I am just like, look, I totally get it. Like, different style, different things. You don't have to like everything that people do, but like, it's 2024. Like, let's grow up, put your big boy pants on, like, find something else to hate on. Like, look at his pocket presence, talk about how he holds onto the football a little too long. Like, the nails aren't.
Yeah, well, and I was just talking about this with Jay on our Tavern Style earlier today, but like, especially to, you know, compare it for Bulls fans, like, we fell in love with Rodman in the 90s when people were still way more uncomfortable with things like a guy wearing women's clothing or a guy painting his nails. Like, who cares?
No one cares.
Exactly.
Do you win?
Exactly.
Are you a great quarterback?
Yeah.
Can you do those things? Welcome to the Bears.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
You don't care, man. Seriously.
Yeah, right. Were you in college, were you covering USC football, USC basketball, a little bit of everything?
A little bit of everything. You kind of have to work your way up the beats. So opening year was covering like soccer, water polo. Water polo is like crazy intense at USC. And then you kind of work your way up. So my sophomore, junior, and senior year, I was doing football and basketball. Unfortunately, our women's basketball program was not what it is now back then, but kind of a mix of all of those. And again, we were so lucky we got to like travel for football and stuff. It was just like it was a great experience.
That's awesome. Yeah, I feel like I went to a small liberal arts school. We did not really have that kind of thing. So shout out to liberal arts schools, but they're not
my D3 liberal arts school had a great swim team.
Yeah, they're not like funneling people into like sports journalism.
Yeah.
Although they are funneling folks into like the actual NBA. I don't know if you guys read that, the pipeline to
the Parkins book. Yeah, I haven't gotten a chance to read it yet.
Y'all have got to check it out. Like, it's seriously, I had such a great time. I talked to Danny and Ben about it for an article coming out this week, and they just did such a great job. I did not even know this was a trend. And D3 schools pump out they're like fueling the future of NBA front offices, which is crazy.
Coaching staffs as well. One of the few claims to fame, the My Little Kenyan College in Ohio, Shaka Smart, who's like one of the biggest names in college men's basketball these days. You know,
Will will be next.
Will's
just
next.
Wait. Yeah. Just wait for it.
Hi, Joey.
Hey, Joe.
I miss you.
I wanted to ask you about, you know, your love of writing.
Yeah.
You know, when did that begin? You talked about your love of sports and how that started. When did the love of writing begin for you?
Oh, man, always. I've been a big reader my whole life. Like I said, only child. I was the, like, little awkward kid bringing a book. I still do that. I bring books to games. When I'm feeling antisocial, I just, like, crack open a book. So that's kind of been an always thing, and it's something that I love and also can be tough about this job. It's just like we write so much for this job, and I think this year that was something I really tried to challenge myself with, was still finding moments where I could enjoy, like, the actual writing aspect of it, because so much of what we're doing is just rote, like, there's writing and then there's just being like, okay, I need to communicate this information as quickly and succinctly as possible. And
more
so
robotic and things like that.
And one of the things about a season like this one, where there are some clear storylines, like Kobe, for instance, having such a breakout year, is that when you're not having to react, you can take a little bit of a moment to, like, pause and be like, let's think and maybe write more creatively about this. But yeah, that's something that I've always loved. And I think from a young age, I knew that I wanted to just figure out how to write and how to kind of get to a job where I could just be writing all the time rather than having to do, like, anything else.
And you got there.
Yeah, got there.
You got there.
Awesome, indeed. I mean, also, not only do you write well talking and covering this team, I caught your segment on CBS Evening News last week. Between their two playing games?
Yeah.
I loved it. I thought you did a great job.
I appreciate that.
So let's put a pin in that. We got to take our first ad break. But when we get back on the other side, we will dive into Julia's thoughts on what the hell is going on with the Chicago Bulls. Shout out to Football CFK in the comments, who said, Julia always asks the best questions at those press conferences.
Thanks,
this
man.
Collab is something I never thought I'd see. Let's go.
I'm seeing it, baby.
Well, here it is. While we are sharing these words from our friends and sponsors, do us a favor, hit that thumbs up button if you're watching along on YouTube or catching that replay on YouTube. It helps us out a lot. Make sure you also subscribe if you aren't already to that CHGO Sports YouTube channel, 54K and growing.
And growing.
CHGO Bulls Today brought to you in part by our friends at Lucy Nicotine. If you're looking to level up your nicotine routine, we've got good news for you, because I recently made a switch over here to this Lucy Nicotine. They were kind of sent some free samples. I'm somebody who's been dealing with off and on nicotine use in my adult years. And they have got a wonderful array of products made for your nicotine routine, delivered straight to your door. 100% pure. I love being lazy. 100% pure nicotine, always tobacco free. And you can choose in what form you want that, whether you want pouches, breakers, or the old classic nicotine gum. You can also choose your strength, starting from as little as 2 milligrams to your less frequent nicotine users, all the way up to 12 for some of you everyday nicotine users. You can also choose a variety of flavors, whether it be the pouches, the breakers, or the gum. Mint, something classic like that. Apple ice, espresso, mango. I just tried the mango flavor the other
mango
day.
Mango flavor?
Incredible!
Changed your life.
Oh my goodness. here's what you do. Level up your nicotine routine with Lucy. Go to lucy.co/CHGO Bulls and use the same promo code CHGO Bulls to get 20% off your first order. Lucy offers free shipping and has a 30-day refund policy if you change your mind for whatever reason. That's lucy.co slash CHGO Bulls to get that 20% off offer. Always free shipping. And here comes the fine print. Lucy products are only for adults of legal age, and every order is age verified. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
That's right. Are you pouches or gum?
I switch it up.
Switch it up?
Yeah. Pouches recently.
Pouches recently? Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. You can tell me more about this stuff later.
If you got questions.
I honestly have a bunch of questions.
Open book, man.
You know me, man.
I've got many vices. Ask me about any of them.
And let's talk about one of them right now. Circus Sportsbook. What up, baby? Yes.
That's not a vice. That's just me winning money all the time.
Well, that's true. You do win a lot, sir.
Who put Moneyline Nuggets when they were down 20 last night?
Smart man over
this
here.
Guy.
And what you get with Circa Sportsbook is the tight money line splits and the low hold model. You know, games will strive to be a minus 110 split on the Circa Sports menu, unlike other sportsbook, which may use minus 115 or minus 120 splits because they're jerks. But Circa Sports keeps a little money as possible on large market bets, especially compared to other books. You get high av limits and transparency because Circa does not limit players based on their winnings. Every player has the same limits, unlike other books who do not limit winning players. We encourage bettors to download and explore all sports betting apps available. Compare the lines from each sports book. You can do that at Circa Sportsbook, man. It's awesome stuff. And of course, Matt's favorite thing, the customer service. He hates bots.
Hate them.
He likes real people sometimes.
They're useless.
But there are real people behind the Circa Sports brand who resolve issues in a timely fashion, unlike other books who use the dreaded chat bots. All aspects of the app are being run by the same team that runs the main Circa Sportsbook at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Amazing place.
Summer League is close, man.
Summer
League makes me feel fine. Download the Circa Sports Illinois app at circasports.com/Illinois-app. That's circasportsbook.com/Illinois-app. To sign up today, also be looking out for Circa events, watch parties, and tailgates. If you know someone who has a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER or text GAMB to 833-234 or visit areyoureallywinning.com. That's my first time.
You crushed it, man. You crushed it. Now I just need you to make yourself an account and just follow my lead. I'm going to make you some money, buddy.
One step at a time.
You just got to trust me.
That's fair. You do win.
Speaking of those events, CHGO Bears draft party Thursday night and Friday night. Joe's on Weed Street. And then, of course, also baseball season is here. The Friday 120 Club for all of those home Friday 120 first pitch games at Wrigley with our guys Cody and Braggs. Shout out to Circa. So we are here. What's up, sir? You're there too.
You're there too?
That's true. She's in the bleachers having fun.
Shout out.
She and Emma doing good work corralling Cody and Braggs as best they can. It's a wrap. Oh my God, I wish Sarah was on camera for that reaction just now.
But someone who doesn't have kids, that look right there was a parent look right there, man. I love it, man.
We are here, and please be joined in studio by Chicago Tribune's Bulls beat reporter Julia Poe. Follow her at by Julia Poe. Julia, I mentioned you were chatting on CBS Evening News' sports segment last week when the Bulls were in the throes of celebrating their win over the Hawks. But I appreciated the fact that you sat there confidently and said, I'm still really not convinced about what the heck this team does, even if they beat the Heat in this game on Friday and go to the playoffs, because that is how I have felt for a long time. I think that's how a lot of our fellow Bulls fans have felt for a long time. So knowing that, and knowing that you certainly had some questions that you wanted answered from this team's VP of basketball ops, when you heard AK speak on Saturday in his season-ending press conference, what was your immediate takeaway?
Well, I think it's tough because I think some of the initial stuff that he said, I was like, okay, that's right. You know, he came out. He had a couple pages of like typed prepared notes and you could see where it was highlighted and bolded. And the big things were like, this has to change. We know that this group isn't working. And him taking responsibility and being like, this is about roster construction, which I think all of those things, very baseline, fair. I don't think this is something that you can put on Billy Donovan. I think that Will and I have talked about this. Will wrote about this, of how the individual players had like a really, I think it's a testament to the character in that group. Some of the results that they had, like DeMar DeRozan, Kobe White, those guys were really putting effort in, and it's clear that the group assembled is not going to work. And we've been saying for a while, they probably need to move away from that. But it did seem like Arturas was at least acknowledging that reality, which was a positive first step. And then almost immediately we start getting reports, Casey Johnson reports out some of the moves that they might be making to not move in that direction. And then you just go like that. That's, I think, where we start getting a little bit of the confusion territory, where it is, okay, if you're saying wholesale change needs to happen and then you're not taking steps to visually show that you're willing to make wholesale change, what are we doing? Like, what exactly is happening, and what are those next steps forward? And I feel harsh saying that sometimes, but it is just like, there are so many talented players in that group that could be so much better and could be lifting teams in such a different direction if there was more of a like vision for this group. And I get that injuries have been what they are, but it is, I think there was just that initial confusion for me where I came out of that press conference and I was like, cool, all that made sense. And then the next 24 hours, you're kind of doing a little bit of the like, okay,
yeah,
where are we going next?
And the injury thing only gets you so far when you remind yourself and them that they started 5-14 with the most healthy version of the roster they had.
Exactly.
I kind of went into that press conference thinking it was going to sound a little bit more like the post-trade deadline press conference.
Yeah.
Where AK was like a little bit defensive, saying things were...
A little bit.
He was happy with the trajectory of things. He was happy with the way that they were playing. Didn't feel like he wanted to make any moves to upset the balance. He said like he wasn't sure that trades made at the deadline were necessarily going to help you. Were you at all surprised that this was the message? Because I came in thinking like, we're going to have to like kind of... Yeah. Not like argue with him, but... Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kind of draw that out a little bit more, and he just came out and said it.
Yeah, I think specifically the tone of the opening statement surprised me. Of like, I think that's actually probably the hardest part of this job, and we talk about it being necessary all the time, but I do think it would be hard to like work really hard on a project and then have to get out on a live stream and look dead in the camera and be like, I messed up. Like that's that's like a tough thing to do. So I was surprised at how clearly purposeful he was with that. Mm-hmm. I think my issue is just not knowing, and like we've both spoken to Arturas off and on just like a little bit throughout the season. He's, you know, this Bulls front office does not talk a ton to the media. And I know that's varied throughout the league, but this just is a front office that does not speak to us very often, especially on the record. And I do think that it's hard to know. I think just where we've got the question marks is kind of like, okay, we can tell that you have a certain understanding that this isn't working, but like, what does understanding that even mean for you? Like, you know what I mean? Like, what does that even look like on paper and in an off season compared to what past off seasons looked like? And how did you not see that it wasn't working before? You know?
Yeah, I was almost so surprised by what he was saying that it took me a while to like respond and reframe some of the questions that I wanted to ask. And I feel like I didn't get to ask a couple of them, but like the big one is, you know, you guys have avoided at all costs a rebuild. And for teams in the middle, like that's kind of the inevitability. You have to rebuild at some point. So like, why do you feel like you can reorient this thing to a place where you're talking about 50 wins? You're talking about a top four seed that can go into the luxury tax. You're talking about winning championships. Like, how do you feel like you can redirect that without having to first go towards the bottom? And that's the thing that I don't know if you like, he kept on saying everything's on the table.
Right.
I know he's not going to say we're going to sign DeMar to a 2-year, $40 million contract, whatever. But that's the thing that I came away with. And it sounds like you too, like just how exactly is this thing going
to, well, and it's trying to understand, like we know on a micro sense where this team kind of values certain, especially like their younger players. Like, I mean, again, brought it up earlier, the season that Kobe had, even the season that Io had, I think those are things that you kind of take away at the end of a year and you go, okay, this defines how we maybe go into an off season. But I still don't get the sense that anyone in that front office sees either of those guys, even Kobe, as a player that they would want to build around. Mm-hmm. They're still building blocks, not like centers of gravity. Yeah. And so when you're... That's where I really have a hard time figuring out like where their momentum is going into the off season, because it's like again, it feels like a very piecemeal understanding of like where they're at and where they need to go. And I don't know if they fully have a vision of what they want things to look like in the future. And that's fair. Like it is the end of the season.
12 hours after they,
yeah. Like I get it.
You shouldn't be necessarily expected to have all the answers, but
yes.
And even if he did have all the answers, again, he's not telling it to us on, you know, on a live stream.
It would be so cool
stream.
If he did. It would be awesome. It would be so cool if he did.
Making summer's better.
Yeah. Right. But no, it is just like, I am very curious to see how this summer informs, because I do think like I came in, you and I both kind of came in midway through that season where they did have a good vision, and that was a great vision. Like No knock on it.
You came over in the Vooch trade, right?
Yeah, yeah. I came. Vooch got traded from Orlando, and then I got traded from Orlando like 6 months later. It was great.
Do we owe them another first round pick for you?
Yeah, we won this trade. We won that trade.
But that vision made sense to me. I liked a lot of things about that team. There were a lot of really good positive aspects to that, and I am curious and interested to see mm-hmm. what a new vision looks like, because it just feels like we've just been kind of trying to muddle through this year, especially. Just yeah. there was not really like a thrust in one direction.
But yeah. Well, part of the new vision might involve them finally finding a trade partner for Zach LaVine,
right?
Because that would actually be a significant roster change, even though they played the back half of the season essentially without him. What do you make of where they are in that situation now, knowing that, you know, I think they were kind of between a rock and a hard place when they offered him that max contract, mm-hmm. but he was coming off of an incredibly impressive season when doing so, and then dealing with injuries again this season, having a bit of questionable behavior and questionable play on the court before getting hurt, you know, all of the drama that happened, someone who clearly at least admitted to being open to a trade, if you want to phrase it kindly that way. If you're the Bulls front office, where do you start to try and find a deal to move Zach? And are you facing down the cold reality of having to attach an asset just to move him at this point, as opposed to maybe actually getting something for him if you had faced the reality and maybe started to move him and some other pieces a year or two ago?
For sure. I do think one of the positives for where they're at right now, not to be overly optimistic, is I actually do think this is a team, a really trade-friendly roster, just in the sense of, like, there's a lot of good pieces. And there's a lot of good pieces on affordable contracts, which does mean that what you could maybe attach to that trade is a little bit more attractive to a team than I think even like IO last year compared to IO this year. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying put IO up for a trade. That's just an example. But like there was a lot of appreciating value on players this year, in my opinion, just based on what this team had to go through in terms of players having to step up due to injury, et cetera, this year. Mm-hmm. So I do think that that's a positive, but I think, yeah, Zach, that has to be the focus of the
summer.
That's
the only way.
Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, I'm interested to see what that market is. It does in some ways make sense to me that the actual trade deadline market was not like the best for him. I do get it, especially with him being banged up and everything, but I just am curious if that gets better over the summer. Mm. I'm curious how NBA teams feel about where he's at and what he can do at this point in his career. I still feel like he is such a strong option for a lot of teams. I can think of like five teams that it would be really fun to see him on. So as someone who has enjoyed watching Zach LaVine play basketball for a while now, mm-hmm. I'd just love to see him get back to being able to play more of his style. Mm-hmm. And it felt like every year that I've been here in Chicago, we've just seen a more like encumbered version of him year by year by year as he tried to like put more on himself. And I'd just love to see him get back to maybe just a little bit of a looser style of play with another team. So curious to see who that is, but I'm not sure what that market looks like for him right now, especially with that contract. It's tough. It is tough.
And I think with those teams losing how they did in the play-in, you know, mm-hmm. it will make them a little more desperate and open to, you know, certain ideas they probably weren't open to at the trade deadline coming up, or previously, I should say.
I mean, you'd think that it would change things, but I don't know. I sometimes wonder how much like postseason results would change things for like mm-hmm. if you're talking about the Bulls front office. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they're more desperate now.
Oh no, not them.
Yeah.
No.
Oh.
I mean like Sacramento.
Yeah.
I mean like Golden State.
For sure.
Maybe
definitely.
They will take a
Orlando
look,
not being able to put the ball in the bucket
correct,
right now.
Correct.
For sure.
The Bulls,
yes. I was going to say, I don't know if the Bulls have ever.
No.
I don't know what it'll take for that front office to hit desperation levels, but yeah. I don't know. Maybe attendance to go down, but like, yeah, I have no idea.
That's about it. Yeah.
I think I'm walking back on that too a little bit, Dave. Like, you know, during the season, I was thinking there's no way a team is going to trade for an injured Zach LaVine coming off the season that he had without the Bulls attaching an asset, whether it's a pick or another player. And maybe that remains true, but I do think your point is a good one that, like, teams like Sacramento, who failed to make the playoffs, Orlando, who can't put the ball in the basket, Cleveland even, what happens if Donovan Mitchell leaves?
Yeah.
I think there are going to be some options out there, and it's just going to be a matter of, can you put pressure, or can some of these other teams put pressure
on each other to like raise the asking price a little bit. But I think the interesting one, and we kind of touched on it, was DeMar and the fact that, you know, AK comes out and says, we need to make some changes. He says, we want to aspire to be a championship caliber team and not just a play-in team. And obviously not aspire to DeMar. I mean, he's the best player on this team. Obviously, I think my feelings about him are pretty well known, but like, if you are trying to ultimately get to a higher level, I think moving on from DeMar in some capacity makes sense. And obviously, like you said, we heard KC reporting that, you know, the Bulls offered him a 2-year up to maybe $40 million per year kind of contract. What's your kind of take on DeMar as a player and like kind of your relationship to him, how you've enjoyed covering him, and then also how you think it kind of works moving with the Bulls?
I mean,
forward with the Bulls.
DeMar is one of my favorite players to cover, just in terms of the I mean, you've seen this as well. The care and the respect that he puts into media interactions is in the NBA, at least in my brief experience, like second to none. It's just he treats that as part of his job, and that's a special thing from a star of his age and caliber. I think the interesting thing for me with this offseason is this is the first time that I felt like DeMar coming back to Chicago might not be in Chicago's hands. Like, this is the first time where I'm like, and again, the last time that we spoke to him was minutes after that loss. And I think all of those guys felt horrible in that moment and probably did not want to see each other or a Bulls uniform or anything for a hot second, because, you know,
hard to blame them.
Yeah, honestly, it's got to be a hard just like moment where you kind of you just have to want space in that moment, I would think. So I get him kind of coming out and speaking the way that he did, but that was I told you guys this before, like that was the first time I'd seen him really take a pause anytime that you asked him like, do you want to come back here? And I do not think that that necessarily reflects on what he's going to do, because again, it was right after a tough loss. But it is interesting to me that he just has so many questions to answer for himself as a player, as a parent, of what he wants the next like 4 years of his life to look like. And those are bigger, like bigger picture questions than just what salary do you want to make. And so I think whether he wants to be on a contender, whether he wants to have to be like the captain mentor while also being the guy leading the team in minutes, it's a lot to ask of someone. Like, that's a lot to ask. So I think,
especially on a team that's not competing for championships.
Yeah, exactly.
16th year. Yeah.
You are growing. He is growing so many players. He is putting in so much work for like fruits that he's never going to see. Like, not even in a bad way, but just like if you're trying to grow Julian Phillips right now, that kid's going to hit his peak when you're close to retirement, you know? So I just think that's the interesting thing for me, is I do think the Bulls, like, they love DeMar. I think they'd love to have him as a locker room leader. I think their price is probably, from what we're seeing right now, is probably too high. But I do think this might be out of their hands right now in terms of what there could, it could be a case where they could make him the best offer. And he's still,
and you were pretty surprised by that too, that, that reaction from him.
I just, not like a ton, just based on how emotional that moment is. But when he started talking about his age, that did hit me a little bit of like when he paused.
He's like always joking around about
it. He's always telling us like, stop talking about my age. Like, oh yeah, I'm going to bring the walker out, like all this stuff. And then him being the one in that moment to be like, the next time I play a game of basketball, I will, it will be my 16th season. That did hit me a little bit of just like, I mean, hey, that just hits you like, man, DeMar's going into years. That's crazy. But also just like, if he's thinking about that in that moment, that's telling you that it's not just like a price tag going into next season. It's like, what's my legacy? Where do I want to be with my family? Like, there's so much more that's, I think, going into this decision than the last time that he was assigning signing a contract to come here.
We got to take our second break, but we also do have some breaking news, actually. While Julie is here, there are some changes coming to the Bulls coaching staff. From Shams Charania just now, Mo Cheeks and Flem are departing. John Bryant getting promoted. We can talk about that on the other side of this ad break. Stick around. Look at this.
Look at this.
We got breaking news.
And y'all are in the right place, baby. Congratulations to you.
Hey. CHO Bulls today. By the way, hit that thumb if you didn't do it the first ad break. Now's your chance. Brought to you by our friends at Ray Chrysler Dodge Jeep and Ram. Are you in the market for a new vehicle? If you are, we've got great news for you, because our partner, Ray Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram in Fox Lake, is celebrating the Jeep Celebration event all month long. And you know what that means?
What it means?
You'll be able to rave about all the savings you made to your friends, Dave, on a wide selection of inventory.
Calling them now.
Don't you want to brag to me about how much money you saved at Ray, Chrysler, Dodge,
Jeep,
Ram?
Every day of my life.
I'm sure you do. It would feel good.
Yes, it would.
You know what else feels good?
Tell me.
Leasing a 2024 all-new Jeep Grand Cherokee Laredo Altitude for just $439 a month for 39 months.
What?
Or, if the Jeep Grand Cherokee isn't big enough for you, check out the third row of seats and lease a new 2024 Jeep Grand Cherokee Limited L for $479 a month for 39 months.
Shut your face.
I know. I will not. I will never. You know this.
This is true.
At Ray CDJR, you'll always be able to shop one of Chicago's largest inventories, drive home with more money in your pocket than you'd expect thanks to that raised price promise, which is, of course, the price you see online, the price you pay when you go to the dealership. Unless, of course, they find you even more savings, which Ray and his team will try to do every time. But that's not all. Just for listening, you can get a free oil change when you mention CHGO Bulls at their service center, or mention CHGO Bulls when you book online at RayCDJR/service. But you've got to make your appointment before April 30th, so why wait? If you're in the market for a new vehicle, you've got to check them out. Their team at Ray Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, because they are the only team we recommend. Visit them today. That's Route 12 in Fox Lake. For more information, visit RayCDJR in Fox Lake or RayCDJR.com. Serving the community since 1963.
You know what I know one thing Will loves to do? Chill.
Chill.
Likes to chill. Likes to relax.
Chill poolside?
Oh, man.
Chill poolside with the Shady Rays on?
Yes, all the time. That's how he rolls, man. And the one way he likes to chill, of course, is how we do it here. And that's with the Frosty Cold Coors Light. Oh, crack it slow.
That sound.
Oh.
It's only 442, but that sound got me.
Hair shot up on your arm a little bit. Yeah, a little bit. There are plenty of chances in life to make things better by choosing chill. Grab every opportunity to choose chill. Then reach for a refreshing Coors Light. Because when those mountains turn blue, it's as cold as the Rockies. Coors Light is cold lager, cold filter, and cold package for a smooth finish. When you embrace that chill mindset, as, of course, Will the Goat Gottlieb always does, it's a good time to choose chill. And crack open a Coors Light. Coors Light is mountain cold refreshment, crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. So make the most out of the times you choose to chill. Choose Coors Light. Get Coors Light delivered straight to your door via Instacart by going to CoorsLight.com/CHGO basketball. That's CoorsLight.com/CHGO basketball. Coors Light, find your chill. Celebrate responsibly, Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
All right,
y'all. I wanted to say something real quick
before
we dive into this.
Yeah.
When you mentioned DeMar DeRozan and family, it hit me immediately. What his daughter said he wanted him to do was to make those playoffs so she can actually come to a game. So I'm wondering if that also is playing into, you know, how he felt at that press conference when he felt like he might have let her down. And it's like, okay, dude, I'm going into year 16 now. I got to get this right.
And he had talked before about – so his eldest daughter, DR, is a basketball player and, like, looks up to him a lot. We better see her in USC Cardinal and Gold one day, baby. But, you know, he has talked before about when she elevates to that next level of hitting, like, middle and then high school basketball, like, that's hitting him. Last year, he talked about that hitting him, of how close she was to playing competitive basketball and the idea of him not being there and not being around for that. I think that just you see some of these guys, and everyone takes it differently. Some people move their family to wherever they are. Some kind of, like, pick one spot for their family to be. But I do think that that's got to be hard, of, like, if you're going to be doing this and you're going to be in the trenches with a team, you might as well at least have your family around you. And, you know, with having, you know, children going from being young to kind of coming up into those formative years, I can see how that would affect him.
Yeah,
totally. Yes. I could also see him being like, okay, I'm going to go secure a really good financial future for my family. You know, like, everyone handles that differently, and there's no right or wrong answer with it. But I do just think that your kids hit a certain age, you hit a certain age. Like, yeah, that's starts becoming more of that forefront informing how you're making those decisions, for sure.
Very true.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about this breaking news. Yeah. This is just 10 minutes ago, Shams Charania tweeting that the Bulls' assistant coach, Maurice Cheeks, is expected to depart from his full-time on-bench role on Billy Donovan's staff, according to sources. Cheeks could remain in another role under Donovan. Assistant Chris Fleming also is no longer part of the staff as Chicago and Donovan make adjustments. Mm. Shams continues with a quote tweet saying the Bulls' assistant coach, John Bryant, is expected to move on to the front is expected to move to the front of the bench next season on Donovan's staff. Bryant, a rising NBA and G League assistant over the last 14 years from G League stops to coaching under Donovan, Doc Rivers, and Brett Brown. Yeah, we've been fortunate enough to get to know John Bryant a little bit, covering those Summer League Bulls for the last couple of years. Yeah. This is pretty interesting stuff. Let's see here. I think Casey Johnson added a little bit of context here, saying, can confirm Fleming will not return. I asked AK directly on Saturday because I was under the impression changes were coming. Mo Cheeks will remain with the Bulls, but not a full-time bench role, according to Casey, who said, more staff stuff. Josh Longstaff is in the mix to be the new lead assistant coach, while John Bryant expected to move from the back of the bench to the front. I'm curious, Julia and Will, as the two beat people here, what you make of this, because you were at AK's press conference, and he was asked about Billy Donovan, swell of support for Billy Donovan, which I'm sure some Bulls fans are rolling their eyes out the back of their head right now. Some of you are in our comments. Hello. He also said that there's a strong belief and support of his front office staff. The one question that was not answered concretely was whether or not Billy's support staff, as far as assistant coaches, would or would not change. We just got the answer. What do you make of it, Julia?
Yeah, I think the Fleming one is interesting just specifically with his role with several individual players. That was Kobe White's assigned individual kind of – when a player comes in, everyone gets kind of assigned their assistant coach, and that was Kobe's guy from his rookie year. So I'm curious how that feels for him for sure. I think with some of these others, like you said, John Bryant has felt like he's been kind of – making some of those steps with getting the summer league promotion, et cetera. That does feel like making some of those steps forward. But I am curious with Chris specifically, if that is, what that will mean just in terms of how they're hoping to organize that staff. That's interesting.
That's interesting.
Sure.
Yeah. Fleming was brought in 2019, I believe, under Jim Boylan. So, it seems like maybe his time here had just kind of run its course. He was not, an AK, somebody that AK or Billy brought in originally, so that could make some sense. Josh Longstaff is kind of a rising star, younger, pretty dynamic coach who obviously works very closely with some of the players. I think he also works pretty closely with Zach and Kobe as well, but he's on the floor. He's been on the front of the bench this year. You can see him yelling at people and telling them what to do on defense. So him stepping into a lead assistant role doesn't surprise me. He's the kind of guy that I feel like could end up being a head coach someday. But I also think this is an opportunity for them to bring in some maybe more creative, offensive minded coaches. And maybe Longstaff is that guy. I don't know him too well, but it feels like an opportunity to add some more dynamic offensive thinking to the coaching staff and to be a little bit more creative. Again, assuming there are some changes to the personnel, that's going to affect things and how we, you can only do so much from a coaching perspective depending on what your personnel is. So maybe that's just the start of it. But they vowed for changes. And the one thing AK said was Billy is staying.
Yes.
And he did not commit to anything else. Even that's the DeMar, true. Even the Patrick stuff, he's there is mutual interest. But he did not say we're keeping them.
Right.
But he said, Billy is our guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They are
that
very,
was the one thing that felt like a real firm, stamp of approval on.
They're very consistent in being locked in with Billy. And I think there are a lot of things behind the scenes that they see from him, especially work ethic and a lot of stuff that he does in the off season that I think have really checked boxes for Arturas. So I'm sure that a lot of this is just trying to continue, like you said, molding that the rest of that staff to follow that. Because a lot of modern NBA coaching is about management of assistant coaches as much as it is anything else, and making sure that you have a group that is kind of conveying a lot of those minute details well. And Billy's a big details guy, but that means that you have to have your whole staff on the same page when you are that big of a details guy. So I think that makes sense. And I think it's great to have Mo Cheeks around in any capacity for a lot of these players.
The players like really respect him.
I respect Mo Cheeks for his ability to make sure that he never speaks to media. It's impressive.
It's impressive stuff.
Well, we are on the road with that man, and his ability.
He can join John Paxson in whatever room he's hiding in. This is a special advisory role.
I've never seen someone Euro step away from a question before, but that man's doing it. But you talk to everyone from like DeMar to Julian and everyone in between, and the level of respect that they have for him and the clear, again, attention to detail that he is giving to those relationships. That's just very positive, I think, for especially young players to have to have that around. It's pretty.
And it's like, I am not used to seeing Billy Donovan as an NBA coach without Mo Cheeks. Yeah. Like every time I see Billy, I see Mo. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Even in OKC, that's just how it was. So him being promoted but not being gone, you know, is makes not surprising. Sense. And I'm glad that's true for everything you said.
John Mayer in the comments saying, so the development guys are moving up thinking emoji face in reference, I guess, to Bryant and Josh Longstaff. The name that we did not hear in any of those reports from Shams or Casey just now that I was curious about is Peter Patton, who, like, as far as sort of like the underlayer of Bulls coaching and development staff this season, got some credit, I think, for work done with this front office, who said we got to improve this team's shot profile, and then brought in guys in Javon and Torrey Craig who had some solid, you know, successful seasons shooting the three ball, and they came here, and then neither of them could, you know, hit the broad side of a barn. But you did see somebody like Io truly improve his three-point shot and the confidence with which he took it. Even DeMar. I don't know if DeMar spent any time working with Peter Patton, but, like, DeMar was launching threes confidently. Even, you know, like, whoever it was, Dalen Terry?
How the shot looks.
Progress. The form looks a little bit better.
The form is better.
So you wonder if this is a sign of change to a coaching staff that needed it, but I also cannot ignore the giant elephant in the room as far as how Bulls fans feel. At least I would say confidently 50%, maybe beyond 50% of Bulls fans who were looking for a breaking news related to the Bulls coaching staff involving a different name. But you guys were there. We all heard AK say it. They have full belief in Billy Donovan.
Yeah.
Whether we as fans believe in Billy Donovan or not, I do not think that that was going to change. This is just kind of twisting the knife to those Bulls fans who did want to see Billy Donovan replaced. Yeah. He's getting a totally different assistant coaching staff, but he's still here.
What did you think of Billy? And, I mean, obviously he's still around as far as we know, but just covering him, because I really enjoyed talking with Billy. I feel like you could just like ask him a broad question and he would just go for 5 minutes and you'd have like 2 weeks worth of stories that you could. I mean, I really enjoyed it. I get people, not everybody's cup of tea, but what was your kind of experience working with him?
I mean, just echoing that, I obviously fans don't work with a person, so they're going to have a different relationship with someone if you're just coming to it as like, this is a guy that coaches my basketball team that I love. Billy's great to work with, like you said. I mean, in terms of, we've talked about before, just how for all the difficulties of covering this team, the individual people themselves, for the most part, are incredibly strong to work with. And so, Billy, you can see, I think the thing that I like about talking with him is that you can see what he wants, what he's trying to get. And especially being on the road with him, sometimes he'll be very candid with us about what's not working and his own, not necessarily frustrations, but like he's working the problem constantly and he is willing to be fairly transparent about how he's trying to work certain problems. So I do think to a certain extent, when I talk about individuals on this team being put in a position where they're not being allowed to succeed, I think Billy falls into that. I think that he is a coach that is, I mean, when you talk about a roster not being assembled right, that's hardest for a coach, you know? And then it goes from there. So I think that in terms of working with him and then also in terms of just kind of what he's got to work with, I think a lot of the discrepancies or areas of improvement for him as a coach do come from hiring the correct staff in that way. Even the shot profile part of it, like that's where you go out and make the right hire. And that's 50% a head coach and 50% a front office. And they do seem to be getting some of those hires right. So that's maybe like a small little optimistic sliver to kind of stick on there for that. Yeah, you know, we love it.
That's your target audience right there.
Yeah, yeah. You saw that I was making eye contact.
Yes, I know, right? I speaking. I do have one more question. Because we were talking about the coaches and the changes, and you guys both said those coaches are kind of player-friendly kind of coaches, and I've always known Billy to be that kind of coach also. So is this more so a move that is for the players, or is it more so a move for Billy?
That is an interesting question. I mean, look, every single coaching staff, like Julie was saying, like assigns an assistant to work with players. And you have like your player development staff, which is part of the coaching staff. But then you have like your actual coaches who are more responsible for like strategy, tactics, style of play versus the player development guys working on like improving individual skills, dribbling, shooting, things like that. So like Peter Patton is not going to like move to the front of the bench and start calling plays. Right. Probably he's the player development specialist.
Unless you would like to go for it, Peter. Live your dream.
But I think it's a really good thing when you're able to like promote people from within and still bring in new voices to add to the conversation, to, you know, just introduce some new ideas. Because I think what was very clear by the end of this season, after, you know, 2.5 seasons of like this basketball just getting really stale. And I think they need to bring some new voices in. So I think that makes sense. But you also open the door for guys like Longstaff and Bryant to have a little bit more of a voice perhaps and have more of an impact on the way that the Bulls are playing.
I like reading a lot of like books about just kind of at, like basketball books kind of about former dynasties or former, I mean, we work with Sam Smith, so you've got a lot to like start with reading on that. And I will say that, like, I'm not saying this is necessarily that move, but one of the things that I have found interesting in trying to kind of learn more about the league and read those types of things is that you often see at the start of any of those big kind of like sea changes for a team, the first thing that changes is not like a player being drafted or anything like that. It's some guy getting promoted within a coaching staff. And it's very interesting, actually, how often that, I mean, Chicago's like the best example of that, right? The Bulls are the best example of that. So that is something that I think for fans who are frustrated, maybe wanting to see just a wholesale, get everyone out of here, let's start fresh. Sometimes those interior hires that look like just little blips on the map can actually be really, really important internal changes in that way.
Immediately thought the Lakers, the Heat, Boston, you know, all these. Boo, New York.
So we were going to spend a bit more time on this, but then we had breaking news to react to. But we still did want to at least touch on, before we let you go, Julia, the fact that you were one of the NBA media members that had a ballot this year for those 23-24 NBA season awards. First off, before we dive into who you voted for, what was it like? Was your first time having
a
ballot?
First time, yeah. I was so geeked when I got the email. Very excited. Huge honor, also like a lot of work. So the time that they send it to you at the end of the season, I was like, oh my God, okay, I got to do so much reading and like all of that. And I talked to Will about it. I feel like I picked the brain of I felt bad for everyone on the beat. I kept being like, can I ask you a question? Okay. But no, I think it's a great process. I think it's something that that's something that I hope to be able to do again in the future. And I do think the one thing I learned from it is that it will definitely change the way that I watch next season moving forward. I didn't get one in prior years, so I didn't really expect to get one this year. So definitely something that would change the way I'd watch the season holistically moving forward. But it was neat doing it. Also, just in a year where Chicago was very relevant.
Yeah.
Multiple of these conversations and trying to kind of talk through with other people and learn how to balance your own kind of bias just of like, this is the guy that I've watched and talked to every day for the last 6 months versus other players.
Yeah.
That was a really interesting process for me personally.
We're not trying to get you in trouble with our Bulls fan audience, but you mentioned the fact that there are some relevant Bulls players.
For sure.
We're going to find out later tonight if Coby White is the winner of the Most Improved Player Award. We're going to find out on Thursday if DeMar DeRozan is the winner of the Clutch Player of the Year Award. where were they on your ballots?
So I actually did vote for both of them, number one overall. Kobe was the one that I felt a little bit stronger on, quite frankly. I know what that debate looked like nationally. Sure. I know how it looked in my own head. I think the thing that it came down to that made me feel fine about it was that I think that most improved player is actually the most nebulous of all the awards.
Yeah.
And so I just defined what improvement meant to me. Mm-hmm. And then I felt like that made sense for Kobe. I think that that's such an interesting category though, because like there are names, I think like Dante Exum is like a great example of a player that you could throw into that and be like, okay, you go from being out of the league to being this in 2 years. How do you not even have anyone bringing your name up? And then, you know, so it's like, it, that one was tough, but I definitely felt just from what we had seen from Kobe, from seeing him grow as a person, which I know is not part of the voting, but it was part of how he changed and how his role changed this year. And then just the numbers themselves. I felt confident in that vote. And I am interested to see how it shakes out tonight. We'll hear from him if he does win it. I think the most important thing is just like, I don't think it matters to him personally.
Yeah.
Like I think he'd be sad if he didn't win it, but the way that his life and who he is as a player has changed this year is not dependent on that award at all. Mm-hmm. And that's great. You know, like he put in everything he needed to kind of change who he is as an NBA player. And that's pretty rare to be able to do and control in that way.
Mm, so true.
Did you have Joker, Luka, SGA somewhere in your top three MVP?
Yes. Yeah. So I think that was, Jokic was still like a fairly easy number one pick for me. The trying to figure out Luka versus SGA was really hard. That was a lot of these. That was my experience this year. I'm sure this is different other years. And some people might say I'm wrong about this, but I found that a lot of the number ones were fairly straightforward. And then, well,
no, I think that's a good point.
Yeah, yeah.
I just hadn't thought about like the second and third rankings being more complicated.
Right. That was where I was, and I was coming at that from like a from the perspective of the W last year, because the WNBA seconds and thirds actually threw overall standings in the end last year. Very like overwhelmingly, Alyssa Thomas was basically upset by how many people did not rate her like second and third in that area. Okay. So that was in my head a lot of like, I don't want to mess up and be cavalier about like my seconds and thirds.
Sure, sure.
So, I thought, like I said, I thought Jokic was a pretty clear number one. I ended up going Luka and then SGA just based on what they had to do for their individual team. Mm-hmm. I thought that Doncic just had to do so much when with the injuries and everything. Yes. Looking back at some of just the like net ratings with him on and off the court during certain times of the year, I was just like, I don't know how you can ignore that. And SGA's team is just like the whole package.
Yeah,
like
they're
like one of my favorite teams to watch, but I'm like, you got everything going for you here. Yeah. So that was kind of where I came out on that one.
Was there one category that you kind of struggled with? Cause you mentioned the Kobe when you kind of thought about him more, but which one did you like really like, oh my God, taking some time with this one.
The hardest one for me was coach. I talked to Casey Johnson about this as well when I was like picking his brain about how, because he's voted for years, and I like asked him just kind of how you go about certain of these, like some of these, and coach was the one that we both were just kind of like, there's no perfect way to pick a coach of the year. And some people might say that there is, but I think that you could sit down and make a solid case for five guys out of the league any given year of like what they have to overcome, what they do, soft skills, hard skills, record, etc. So that one was so tough. I came in, I had like my list, my one through five. I came in, I was like, okay. And then I rearranged it. And then my final ballot was my original one. And I was like,
so who'd you end up
with? It's like tinkering with your fantasy football lineup on Sunday morning. You're like, you know what? Exactly. No, I had it right. Yeah. Just leave it.
I ended up going OKC for that one. Just again, based on like, if you have that young of a group and you, I think anytime that you have like an early arrival of a young group like that to where they were at. And it helped that, you know, I didn't put my ballot in until about 2 hours before I had to, because I was just like, let's get right up to the finish line on this. But I think anytime that you're able to take that level of young talent and young personality, get it together, and then get the package there before expected. It's just like,
I think that would be my vote too. Daigneault, like, you take your team 15 wins better last year, 15 wins again better this year.
Yep.
You're getting them to defend at a super high level. Yep. You get them to the number one seed, like,
in the West.
In the West.
Yeah.
He did a great job.
And their poise, I think some of that also comes down to, like, their poise in certain games against teams so much more experienced than them. It was very impressive to me in the regular season. We'll see how it looks in the postseason.
Totally. But. So we got MVP, coach, MIP.
Clutch.
What else do we have?
DPOY. Player.
Okay, so I went Wemby on that one.
Wow, nice. Wemby over Rudy. Nice.
Yeah.
I love it.
I did.
What was the tiebreaker, the difference?
The 3-on-1 fast break that everybody saw.
Honestly, that was insane.
It was insane. I did see a lot of people saying you could just submit that. I think there were a few things when I was looking through, like, just stats that broke it down, but also that was one of the ones that I watched a lot of like a decent amount of film for. Mm-hmm. And I do just think that they're such different defenders. Some of these awards I don't love comparing on, because it's like, how do you compare SGA versus Luka versus Jokic as, like, actual players? You just can't do that. Mm-hmm. Same thing as defenders. Wemby and Gobert are, like, as different as it comes. Yeah. That thing that Wemby can do where he can let you go under him so that he can just pop behind you and just go, you know?
Hey, little fella.
That's crazy. But I think that when I looked at the two of them and the way that they were influencing around the rim, and that's both backed up by statistics, but also the consistency that Wemby was able to have around the rim, I just could not argue myself out of it. And it's crazy to think he's only going to get better.
Yes.
That's nuts.
He literally could be Defensive Player of the Year for, like, the next 13
years. Yeah. God bless.
And people are sick of Rudy winning. Like, watch out. Like,
welcome. Yeah. So that was what won me over. But that was another tough one. I'd say, like, coach, that one. And then I thought a lot about most improved, like I said, just because we spent so much time around Kobe this year. He got so sick of us.
Yeah, he really did.
What about Sixth Man of the Year?
I'm blanking. Oh, Monk. I went Monk.
Okay, yeah. All right.
Yeah. I went Monk.
He was awesome. He wasn't even a finalist last year, and Dave and I were like,
Where
is Malik Monk? He's so good.
We don't have time to dive into the, you know, all NBAs, but in your mind, in your opinion, Caruso a lock for first team all defense?
I voted him first team. Right. I know that some of the early returns on ballots of folks that I really respect did not have him. They had him second team, but I think he's got a shakeout in first. I really do think it's based on just who you got the chance to watch a little bit more.
Yeah.
I don't really know how you can look at stats and then just watch one Bulls game.
Yeah.
One Bulls game, and I don't think you can argue it. The impact he had.
Watch the Bulls defense when he's on the floor, and watch the Bulls defense when he's not.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us, Julia. It was such a pleasure to chat with you. Bulls Nation, follow Julia on Twitter. By Julia Poe is the handle. Read her stuff for the Chicago Tribune. I love the piece you wrote about Kobe earlier this year. You did a tremendous job providing our fellow Bulls fans with that content and coverage. Keep up the great work.
Yes.
Enjoy your off season.
Yes.
Read a book.
I will.
Take a walk.
I'll be taking these beers to go. Just pack it open.
And we will be back tomorrow, same time, same place, 4 p.m. Central Time. In the meantime, Will is at Will_Golly. Big Dave Bow. BWL Sports. Shout out and thanks to our friend and producer Sarah on the controls today.
Yes, sir.
I'm Bulls_Peck. We are CHO_Bulls. Him. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful rest of your Tuesday. We will talk to you tomorrow. See you, be good.
Peace. Love.
Y'all silly like the mayor.